Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. It's USDA Report Day for Commodity Week. Our panelists this week include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Lane Cobb of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Jim McCormick from Allendale out of McHenry, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find this and all of our ag programming online to listen to on demand, mostly in its entirety, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. If you prefer to use podcasting tools, try iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, and one of my favorite ways, by using the NPR One app. Now let's turn our attention to what really did happen at the CME Group and with USDA's release of the October crop production numbers and, of course, the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Elaine Cubb, USDA, in the grain stocks report, pointed to a 301 million bushel carryout for the current, or the 16-17 old crop soybean year. That came to fruition, and it translated right into a 430 million carryout for soybeans. And I think I was a bit surprised that the market reacted as positively as it did, because it's had this number for a couple of weeks now.
No, you're absolutely right that the scale of the reaction was quite large. So here on Thursday, we have the November contract closed up over 26 cents per bushel. I mean, that's a pretty big reaction in a market that has otherwise been very low volatility lately. The trade expectations going into this shouldn't have been too surprised to see the 2017-2018 ending stocks projection at 430 million bushels. I mean, that's less than they expected last year's report. Last month's report. So I guess that really is what they were reacting to, is a slight dip in the yield per harvested acre, a slight increase in the area harvested. But that ending stocks number for this current marketing year, that's really what drove this 26 cent reaction today.
So I believe, if I've got the number right, and I don't have it in front of me, but Jim McCormick, 475 was the carryout for soybeans last month. They dropped it to 430. They did take down by 0.4 of a bushel per acre a yield, but they increased acreage and ended up with the same production number. It's still, I guess, I'm wondering why really it is that we had such a pop in the marketplace.
My opinion is, plain and simple, the funds have been long going into this report. I think they wanted to buy it no matter what. A lot of people I heard were saying, hey, look, if this thing breaks hard, we're going to buy a bearish report. And when they didn't get the bearish report, I think they just chased into it real quick. Then you kind of took out that technical resistance, that September high, which is right around that 987 level. Once that was tripped, it ran another round of buy stops. I think some of the guys who've been short recently blew out, and that just kind of accelerated it. I agree. I was a little bit surprised by the movement. The acreage did increase by 700,000. That was right in line with what Allendale's research staff was thinking, and we think we got more to go. We think we got another 400,000 to 500,000 acreage increase is going to show up down the line, and by January we'll be up to 1 million acreage higher than what we started with. And if they do that, you know, your carryout's going to go right, interesting enough, right back to 450 million, we believe, which, interesting enough, matches the average guess of what the trade was thinking coming into today.
Well, I'll get back to you in a moment, because I want to know what you think that'll do to the price of soybeans. But I'm going to let Aaron Curtis and Bill Gentry jump in and either tell me where they think soybeans are going to go or give me their most important number out of the soybeans. And Aaron, let's start with you on the cash grain side of the markets.
Yeah, I think just like Jim said, it was somewhat surprising here, but I tend to agree with what he said. I think the market has been looking to just to buy soybeans. If you look at the fund breakdown here going into the report, they continue to be on the long side of soybeans versus the short wheat and corn side. So I think they were going to buy something no matter what. We've been able to hold that 960, 965 November soybean futures number here for quite a while. A little bit of concern about some dry weather in northern Brazil. I think that's helping as well. But it sure felt like after the report here, the market was going to try to be higher no matter what. Now, 30 cents was probably a little surprising the way we finished up. We'll see what we do up here around this magic $10 area on November beans. But I got to think the producers watching this pretty closely, because you start doing some of the math here on some of the bean yields around the country, and it starts to add up pretty good, especially with another 26 cents up here today.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management, your assessment?
Yeah, I think one of the numbers that's kind of hidden in the background is the stocks to use ratio for soybeans. Last month we inked about just about 11%. This month we're just a little bit below 10%, and a full point reduction in stocks to use ratio is very important, because it underscores how much demand we really have going on. We're increasing the supply, and that's been the USDA's process, but our demand is really creeping in there. I think it's very impressive and notable.
So, Bill, I want you to follow up then on that. Where do you think the price of soybeans is headed?
Well, we've been in an upward channel for an extended period of time. I think we could probably tack on another 25 or 30 cents. But I guess right now, this minute, I don't see a real sense of urgency. We've been following the funds for an extended period of time, and like you say, the funds are already long. I don't see any real reason right this minute for them to pile on and get a lot longer. So I think we're still going to be range-bound. We're going to see peaks and valleys going forward. But I do think we should have a positive price bias until after the first of the year, when South America starts to get into the mix.
And Jim, I take it that Allendale has a view to the opposite side of the marketplace.
Well, I would agree, yes and no. I mean, right now, I think just pure technical-wise, you close above that 87, the funds are long. If we can get through this technical, psychological $10 level, we're going to maybe push this back up to 10-20. But we think you get anywhere close there, farmers need to be pushing this grain out the door, because our modeling, like you said, the crop stocks use did drop to 9.9%. On our modeling, that puts an economic value of beans at about 970. So we're overvalued according to our futures modeling. You look at where the government's at, their guess, they left the cash price unchanged at 920. So we're thinking, yeah, we'll get a run-up. We think it's a great opportunity for producers to go ahead and move the grain. And if they want to try to play the weather in South America, I'm encouraging my customers, use options. As we learn anything, the weather is crazy anymore. I don't know if anybody can really have a good feel for what's going to happen week to week, let alone month to month. And, you know, use the Board of Trade options as a way to maintain ownership into the summertime. But yeah, we think this is an opportunity to sell, plain and simple.
Yeah, Lane Cub, that is where I was actually headed, was the weather in South America, the impact it has or is having on the marketplace in Chicago. Do you think any of what we saw today was lifted by a lack of rainfall in Mato Grosso?
And that's absolutely the case perhaps today. When you look at the very near-term forecast, that 6 to 10-day forecast, there is dry weather, and that is concern that they will continue to be behind in their planting. You know, they're 10% planted when they would hope to be 18 or 20% planted. So I think that certainly helps on a day like today to keep that upward momentum going upward. But I'll echo what Jim said about sort of two different time frames here. We have sort of a bullish pop at the moment, but longer term, you look at longer term forecasts and the potential for La Nina to form, that's a greater than 50% probability that that might happen as the year goes on, or as 2018 goes on, and that would be bearish to soybean prices.
Okay, so let's go through each of you on soybeans before we decide to switch over to corn and talk a bit about that. I take it, and Aaron, I'm not sure that I've gotten from you this yet at this point. So short term, each of you are positive, and that would, am I thinking in the 1 to 3 week time frame potentially for each of you? And then thereafter, it has a lot to do with what the weather is actually going to do in South America. Is that a fair assessment, Aaron?
I think that's right. I think you got to continue to watch this pretty closely. If we continue to build on this, technically get through that $10 mark, I think you still have to be an active seller above $10 here, and just kind of, do the math here. It just makes sense. Basically, even at a 430 million bushel carryout, that doesn't scream that we need to go a lot higher than $10 at this point. Keep one eye on the weather, but there's probably going to be an opportunity here as we finish up bean harvest. Looks like the weather straightens up after this weekend to where we're going to see some pretty active bean harvest again. There's going to be a lot of pressure to try to get these beans kind of done before the next round of rainy weather. So I think typically you kind of get past that 50% mark on soybean harvest, but a little bit of a low in here. But I'd be looking probably between now and, you know, that Thanksgiving time frame to be watching for this market to kind of level out and kind of keeping one eye on the weather. If that continues to be adverse, be a little more careful there, maybe re-own it on some paper. But I think you got to realize, especially up in that Mato Grosso area, the farmers are can cover a lot of ground in a lot of hurry. So if the weather does change back to a little more rainy period, that could alleviate some of that concern pretty quickly.
So time is their friend for soybeans, although I don't know how many they will have that they can store on the farm at this point. Bill, what do producers do?
Well, I think right now when you look at the market profile, the soybean market's showing you just a little bit of carry out for the first of the year and even a little bit into March. So there is some storability there, especially in some softer basis areas. But I think most of the bin space is probably going to be used by corn. And so what I would do is watch my product market. I've got a soybean meal market that's crowding $330 a ton. The oil really didn't do very much today. So my product, my meal market's strong. My beans are okay, but we'll probably run out of gas. So I would say reward the market with my cash and do some re-ownership for something down the road.
Does the cash basis, and Aaron, I'm going to come back to you on this one. Does cash basis for corn and soybeans tell you which one they should store on the farm at the moment?
Well, I think there's good carry in both at this point. I think you got to watch his storability a little bit here. I think both of them are returning to decent return to storage at this point. It's pretty good carry in both markets here. So I think it's kind of comes down to just kind of penciling the math on shrink is another factor you got to consider. Basis both pretty weak at this point. We've seen some improvement as barge freight has kind of finally weakened up here a little bit, so that's allowed some basis improvement, but still pretty weak historically for this time of year. But if you look at your local elevator, there's some opportunity in some cases to where the carry in the market out to even Jan pays for your storage. So I think you got to be doing the math on that and just kind of watch that. But I think as far as carrying it at home, I think the math looks like it kind of, you know, pencils out for both at this point. We'll see if that changes here over the short term. But there is some carry in the market, and you got to be willing to take some advantage of that.
Allendale suggestions, Jim?
I'm telling you, if you can hold on farm, especially if you can hold on to it, hold on to it. I mean, I do think it's going to, you know, like I said, the carriers are paying for it. You know, they're giving you $9.92 for the beans today. They're giving you, you know, dang near $10.30 for July. But if you got to make a decision, either you got a choice, either I got to store beans or store corn. I personally have been recommending guys look to store corn and move the beans. The beans, I think, are, like I said, our models say they're a little bit overvalued. Everything from here on out, you're just betting weather in South America. And then plain and simple, guys can sell beans today and make money. A lot of my customers say, Jim, plain and simple, $3.50 board price corn, national cash average price of corn at $3, I'm losing money right now. So they're choosing to sell the grain that they're making money at, and they're going to hold on corn and see if this corn market can grind a little bit higher. I am a little bit positive corn. I don't call myself bullish, but I do think corn will work its way higher as we go into the wintertime.
And Elaine, your thought process here. And then if you have the maps, I don't know whether you've got these in front of you from USDA or the changes on state by state on soybeans. I'd like to know what everybody thinks about those changes and the objective yields too.
Well, I will just make a comment about storing, make a little bit of a plug for storing beans rather than corn. Just the near-term carry is probably stronger for beans. And if you're only intending to carry one or the other of these into winter, I guess you'd go with beans. But the point about storing corn is that it could be indefinite, right? It could be a number of years. I've been doing a number of sort of back of the napkin calculations about what happens if you store corn more than 18 months or 24 months, because that's something that could happen if we have multiple series of years of very large corn carryovers. You could have farmers that choose to carry a crop year beyond one marketing year. And I spoke to a lot of experts about grain storage. And the only thing about that is that the corn has to be very, very dry. And I think most farmers know that. But this year with the late production, the late production of the corn, or they're the heat units that have just been late all along the growing season, we may not have a lot of really dry corn unless somebody has a dryer on their farm. So that's just a little logistical, nicety to consider as you're choosing between corn or beans to store.
And then if you look at those maps and the changes in yields, I kind of want to go through some of those, maybe Elaine, since you're in the western part of the Corn Belt. For soybeans to begin with, 56 bushels lower for what, South Dakota, for the Dakotas, for Iowa. They were down a bushel to the acre. Illinois was down a bushel to the acre. The Dakotas were up one and unchanged. Nebraska was unchanged. Do those seem right to you?
They seem reasonable to me when you looked, especially, and not only the soybeans, but the corn too. They seem to be lowering them state by state compared to last year in the areas that had the later drought. So southern Illinois, or southern Iowa, all of Illinois, that made sense. That jived with where the drought was and when the drought formed.
One of the questions we had last time around, and I don't know who wants to follow up on this, but on the objective yields, was that the grams per pod was really heavy, and they didn't have a lot to work with at that point. The October 17 is also very heavy, though it's down slightly from where it was. And if it still comes to fruition, it will be the heaviest that they have on record since 2004 at this point. Do the beans really, do they look like they're going to weigh in that heavily, Aaron? Have you been watching that number at all?
Kind of from a big picture view, but I think overall quality continues to be pretty good. I mean, it looks like USDA's got it pegged just a little bit better than a year ago. So haven't heard any concerns about weight at this point. I think one thing to watch, especially in the eastern Corn Belt, we did hear as the later beans kind of came through, that some of the yields did start to back off a little bit. A lot of the early beans were very good, better than expectations. And now that we've gotten into a little bit of the later stuff, it seems like things have backed off a touch. So, not too much of a surprise that we saw, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio kind of back off on yields a little bit compared to who they were last month, Todd.
Bill Gentry, take me through the numbers that you found of most interest out of the corn.
Well, I think realistically, the demand side of the equation is really starting to perk up a little bit. Like I talked about, the stocks to use ratio there was a little bit tighter. I think the carryout number is not overly burdensome. And I think realistically, when you look at the feed and the residual doing what they're doing, it turns out to be a little bit more constructive. I agree with the earlier discussion. We don't have a real bullish scenario, but it's a little bit, the glass is more half full than half empty. And I think going forward, today's report might have been, as far as numbers are concerned, the most bearish for corn, but the trade said, no, I don't need that. And I think the funds are going to be in the driver's seat going forward, and we'll see if they want to cover their shorts. I was pretty surprised to see that they added to their short positions last week. I think this is a very constructive environment for them to cover some of those shorts and maybe even look at the long side one of these days, but not yet.
And your assessment, Jim McCormick?
I was going to say, as for the yields, the one thing that probably caught me the surprise of the most, I got to say, is probably Indiana. For them to raise the Indiana crop back up to 173 for the corn, essentially matching last year's crop. I mean, just from I'm from Indiana originally. I live here in Chicago. My folks will still live down in Seymour, Indiana. I drove back through there back and forth all spring and summer, and it just seemed like with all the replant going on in northern Indiana, a lot of customers I've talked to say it's a good crop, but it's not as good as last year. So that was probably the biggest surprise standing out, was that the government views this crop pretty much the same as last year.
Hey, Bill Gentry, you're right there. What do you think? Is he correct on that one?
Yes, most assuredly. I think realistically, we had quite a few challenges here, and I think the late season for the beans didn't really fill them out the way we wanted to. The corn with the double and triple planting times, the crop was hurt. Now, it's not as good as a year ago, but it's still good. So realistically, I think this was, like I said, I think this is probably the biggest number we're going to see from the USDA, and we could see some yield reductions going forward when we get a little bit more material numbers.
Elaine Cupp, there were some interesting things in the executive summary from USDA. They included, and this came out on the same day that there was a news story about USDA asking for an update, asking what they should do to update their surveys. They included a secondary data source, which they've been doing for a while, but they captured some data from NASA as it relates to grain yield. And I don't know whether there's anything really worthwhile to discuss there other than they gave us a picture of what that looks like.
Yeah, and I think the concern for a while here has been that scientifically, you get less and less confident about your numbers when they don't have as much participation from the farmers. You know, the best data that USDA can come up with is when they actually are getting the data from out in the field. And if the farmers aren't participating in that reduces the reliability of their data. However, I'm going to say that any sort of aerial data, whether it comes from a satellite or from a drone or from an airplane or whatever, that's not going to really help compared to actually getting out in the field and counting kernels and weighing pods. So I don't know that that additional source is going to be the best additional source, but I agree that they probably do need more data points of some variety. I'll just make a plug for somebody who's been out in the more drought affected areas this year. You know, in Illinois, these guys are talking about not as good as last year, but still pretty good. And here in South Dakota, Nebraska, some of these drought areas, you know, it's nowhere near as good as last year, but it's not as bad as expected, as was expected 3 or 4 months ago. So I can still see why the yield on the corn, for instance, came up in this month's WASDE report.
And the objective numbers, Elaine, still show that from September to October, there are as many ears in the field. That does change, not a lot from September to October, but from August to September, it always goes up. And that it's a pretty heavy ear weight, too.
Yes. I mean, and that's kind of wild, too, when you think of, again, when the drought occurred in the heart of the Corn Belt, it was late in the season when those ears were filling, when the kernels were forming. So that's kind of puzzling. Yeah.
So what do you think, Elaine, and I'll go through the rest of you, about what producers should consider as they're going through the field now? They probably do have field storage or home storage in the bin, but they'll likely have to use commercial storage as well. What are their considerations on both sides of that?
Like I mentioned before, just make sure that it's good and dry, because if you're going to sit and wait for some more favorable cash price opportunity, you could be waiting a very long time.
Aaron Curtis?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a continued desire to sell some beans and hold corn, and that's been pretty consistent, Todd, to the last, I want to say, 3 years. You know, sell your beans and try to finance your corn position, and that seems to be consistent again. We just haven't seen a lot of corn harvest yet in Illinois, and I know we got a long way to go. So we'll see what happens as the producer gets a little farther into it. We are seeing some instances where the corn has been a little bit better than expected, or even a lot better than expected. The producer has been selling a little bit of that overrun, thinking that maybe there's not a lot of upside in prices. Also seeing or hearing quite a few stories of you know, farmers selling the corn and buying it back with some of these cheap options. So I think you got to look at the carry in the market. If you can, at least on stuff that's at the elevator, if you can store it and cover your storage costs here into that Jan time frame, I think you got to consider that. If you want to buy it back, use some options. But I think as far as basis right now, both for corn and soybeans, it's kind of telling you to do anything but really store it. But obviously, you got to be conscious of cash needs here as we move through the fall months too, and that has to take precedent over some of your decisions here moving forward. But at these basis levels, kind of telling you to be patient here if you can.
Yeah, I think realistically, when I look at the futures markets doing what they did today, the outside day up in the corn is pretty telling that we probably have a low of consequence with some upside potential. I know the numbers are big at the bottom of the page, but I think realistically, we still have 20 or 30 cents upside without a whole lot of difficulty, especially considering how short the funds are. The soybean market, you know, there might be a little bit of incentive to store, but letting loose of the beans has been an odds-on favorite for the last several years, because it's just try to free up the space and get a little bit of cash flow going.
I agree. And like I said, we'd recommend moving the beans, holding on the corn. I am a little bit friendly corn in the long run. It's interesting. Today, Dease corn settled at about 349. A month ago on a September crop report, the government essentially said we had 5 million less bushels projected carryout. And on that date, we settled the corn market at 351.5. All year long last year, we've been bouncing about between a 235 to a 24 carryout. The corn market, if you look at it, D16 corn got up to 360. The March contract got up to around a 380 level. The May July contracts got up close to $4, trading the, like I said, that 235 to 24 carryout. With the carryout a little bit below that, maybe downticking a little bit more if we take a few more acres off, I think you're going to get that corn market back up to that 380 to $4 level. And we're telling customers, hey, if you keep an eye, if you're storing that grain, they got a nice carry from Dece to July. You get that July corn up to 4410, sell it. Lock it in. Sell that price that you want. You can always use the board to re-own it down the line if you want to play a weather play. Because like one of the other people said, there's a lot of grain, and we produce a lot of grain. So you don't want to get caught. What's happened the last 2 years and put a lot of farmers in a very bad position is they just held on to that grain too long, waiting for that big move higher. And then they got the force to dump it right at the very end of the marketing year. And we're trying to encourage you guys not to get caught doing that again, because we have another record crop for some reason. We're going to bury the market one more time into the late summer, just like this year.
You know, I recall you telling me up front about extra acres coming yet for soybeans. Did you mention lower acres for corn?
Well, the corn acres are down about 500,000. So it wouldn't surprise me if they lower that a little bit. The bean acres, we do think we're going to get more bean acres. I mean, I told a lot of my customers way back in the springtime that I thought we were going to plant more bean acres than corn because of the economics suggested the corn was tight, financing's tight for the producers. They're going to go with beans. It looks to me like that may be what happens when it's all said and done in January. And, you know, talking to people today, I think, Todd, that there's a decent shot we'll see even more bean acres possibly in 2018, because I don't, you know, just talking to bankers and all that, the farm community is in a lot worse shape now than they were just even a year ago, because the price of corn never got high enough for farmers to sell. And, the budget's getting really tight right now.
Okay, so this brings me to another discussion point. At this point, corn and soybean acres combined are the highest they have ever been, according to USDA. They released that this afternoon. So that's on record, and we have fairly low prices. Do we have to lose acres somewhere, someplace, sometime in the 2018 season? Does anybody think that's the case?
I think the only way you're going to really lose acres is if the government steps up and pays somebody to take ground out of production. I think you'll always find somebody who is going to try to get something out of that ground, even if it just covers, you know, basic costs. I think that's why I lean to think we can get more beans, because I think guys, they can't afford to not do it. They're always going to look at it and say, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, if you look here in Illinois, it's a classic example. Who would have thought we had flooding rains in northern Illinois in the second week of July? And by the time you got to got into fall harvest, we have a drought going on, and you know, you never know. So I think guys they'll try to plant it if they can.
Aaron Curtis, what are the fundamentals of concern for you?
I think exports continue to be a concern, at least in our world, because I think if you look at 1.85 billion bushels on corn, it's considerably down from a year ago, and that just continues to be due to South America continuing to have a large tail. Argentina continues to be the source right now of cheaper corn. We continue to not be really competitive until we get into that December, January time frame. So we're going to have a window when the offers in Argentina have dried up a little bit to be able to sell some corn. But that continues to be a little concern. Cash connected export circles continue to kind of argue that number could still be a little bit too high at this point. We've got to have a lot of catching up to do here in a hurry. So if we don't get that business here in that window, it's going to be a little concern, and that could end up adding to the carry out here as we move forward. Same thing on soybeans. USDA continued to be pretty optimistic on soybean exports, and we're finally starting to see some catch up here. We got into the new year on a pretty slow pace to what we were used to here the last few years. So I think that's a couple numbers to kind of keep an eye on here with these big carryouts. We need that export program to be what the USDA is kind of forecasting for this year. Otherwise, we kind of risk building carryouts again, and obviously that could be a drag on prices here as we move into next spring and summer.
And I think we'll just fold that same question, fundamentals of concern to watch, in with the final question, which is whatever your final word is. And Lane Cub, fundamentals that you're concerned about, if any, or things that you think are really positive, and a final word from you, please.
Well, a fundamental of concern, I'll kind of build on what Jim was talking about, soybean acres, not just here in the United States, but I think globally that could be a bearish concern. China is no longer promising to pay their farmers $9, $10 a bushel for corn, so you could start to see more oilseeds coming into China's acres, certainly as Brazil is planting. They're more motivated to be planting beans than corn. So I think there's just that's a concern of mine is global acreage of soybeans, but I will leave my final word a little more hope that even though we live in this world of super abundant crops year after year after year, if you are proactive and you look out even now, I mean, I know it's early to start thinking 2018, but if you look out at the December 2018 corn contract, for instance, it was darn near $4 today. So there's, you know, an opportunity to be proactive and get things locked in way ahead of time.
Bill Gentry.
Yeah, looking at the demand piece consistently, I think the livestock expansion is going to help with the demand side domestically. I don't think that it's fully capable of keeping up with a reduction in exports, but that's yet to be seen. So I think realistically, I'm cautiously optimistic for the corn market. The soybeans, I think we're probably a little bit closer to the top than I don't want to say a bottom, but I think realistically, we're going to get into some serious headwinds in the next 20 or 30 cents, and we're going to need some really good news to go ahead and break through that if we can.
And Jim McCormick.
What I'm looking at just, yeah, I agree. Beans 20, 30 higher, you got to sell into it. Be a little bit optimistic on the corn here. Store it. The one fundamental thing I'm looking at that I'm really concerned about right now is out of Washington, this NAFTA deal. It could be, you know, if President Trump does decide to pull us out of it, that could throw a lot of our marketing down to Mexico, primarily into chaos. We sell a lot of beef to them, a lot of pork to them. We sell a lot of grain to them. We don't know what can happen with it, but if we lose one of our major trading partners due to a political, you know, time, we got abundant supply that we need to export as much as we can. That's something I think everyone in agriculture should be concerned about. There's no doubt about it. NAFTA has had its pluses and minuses as an industry, as the world as a whole. But the one thing you cannot deny is agriculture has definitely been on the plus side of these trade deals. So anytime we tear them up, it's something we got to be concerned about.
It is important to note that Mexico imports more corn from the United States than any other nation. Aaron Curtis, your final thought.
Yeah, I think I just echo what the panelists said on these soybeans here as we approach, you know, a lot of cases, maybe 950 cash here. You know, that pencils out to a fairly decent return based on what the yields we saw here, especially in an early harvest here on soybeans. So I continue to be kind of proactive here. We continue to move this bean market higher and try to sell into that as we continue to hopefully continue to see a little bit of a bounce, and being patient on corn, I think, is still the right thing to do here, at least in the short term, as we move forward and see how the last tail of this corn harvest goes.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org in the iTunes Store. That's the Apple Podcast in Google Play. You can find us in the NPR One app and on Stitcher as well. Our panelists today have included Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Jim McCormick of Allendale from McHenry, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.